This is Rod Barnett of The Bloody Pit, and I want to welcome you to the Time Shifters podcast. This podcast takes a fun look at the films of long past, recent past, and the almost present, as well as the events and news surrounding them. Your hosts, Christopher and Matt, would love to hear from you, and there are several ways to get in touch with them. Look for the Time Shifters podcast group on Facebook. Follow the two on Twitter. Christopher is at Time Shifters Pod and Matt is at Movies at the Mat. Or you can send them a typed or recorded message to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Please rate and review the show at any of those outlets. Now, from the Time Shifters studio, here are Christopher and Matt.
Everyone, welcome back. All right, this is sort of, we're half in studio. we're in studio, but in each other's studios, thanks to winter finally hitting the tri-state area. Matt, how you been?
I'm good. Snowed in, I guess.
Well, it's probably safer than being out on the roads because they've plowed half of our streets around here, but not all of them. So I don't know what the rest of the city's like. But yeah, better off to try to do the Skype thing and keep the podcast moving. But I think we'll manage okay. So we got some news stories and stuff that we should start with. Right off the top, another actor has been lost to us. William Morgan Shepherd, who was a brilliant character actor who showed up in all kinds of things. You may actually recognize his son, Mark Shepherd, more. Matt, I'm sure he was familiar with you with Supernatural.
Yes.
His father, though, was just a great actor, character actor. He's been in Doctor Who, Star Trek, tons of films, lots of TV shows. He's not a name you might recognize, but if you heard his voice, you would recognize the voice. I think he just had one of those fantastic personalities and voices that just, you know, he got your attention with whatever it was he was doing. So very sad day. Thoughts, you know, to him and his family. And, you know, Mark Shepherd is another actor that has been absolutely everywhere. He's kind of followed in his dad's footsteps. Although maybe finding even more success than his father.
Yeah, I think that could be argued. And then Mark even put out on social media kind of William's last day, where Mark, his wife, and I think they have two kids, maybe one, where they just went and spent the day with him and were with him when he passed. And they said it was a lot of fun, like spending that time with him and saying goodbye, and that they actually were like enjoying themselves and that he passed peacefully.
Yeah.
And that they went home and they actually viewed it as a positive
day.
Yeah,
that's good. I'm glad he had that moment with them. I'm glad he wasn't, you know, on the other side of the country or anything like that, which is, you know, often the life of actors. So I'm glad he had that time and I'm glad it was peaceful. And yeah, just sorry to see him go. Now, things that I wish would go, this news story, you know, there are some things that I think are meant to, like, fade away, and smallpox or something. The Three Stooges, I think, maybe is another one. Apparently, C3 Entertainment, who owns the Three Stooges brand right now, is looking for a bunch of early teen or preteen boys to do a young adult reboot of the Three Stooges. I struggle to think of anything that could be a worse idea. This just sounds so stupid.
I posted what I thought were worse ideas. Although I don't know if they are worse. They might just be on par as bad.
It was almost one of these things where you have to check. It's like, is this a real story? Is someone really trying to do this?
Right.
Now, whether it actually happens, apparently they're at this point, it's something they want to do, and they're looking to cast, and that's about it. So maybe it won't happen, and we can only hope, I think. We can only hope that this won't happen.
Even though the working title is awful, The Little Stooges.
The Three Little Stooges, yeah.
The Three Little Stooges. Like, that's just... The Three Stooges only worked then.
Right. Yeah.
They
exactly.
Don't work now. Like, They even tried that 2012 movie that I don't think anybody went to see. I don't even think the actors went to go see
that forgot movie. It existed.
Oh, just I get it. It's a property, and everybody's all about bringing back properties, but we don't need to bring back that one.
You know what's funny? Well, maybe it's not funny. It's almost sad. Apparently, they're going to do a Three Stooges 2, which is a sequel to that 2012 reboot.
Okay.
That's all being worked on by C3 Entertainment, but not related to the Three Little Stooges.
Because that movie made no money and they're ready to make less money?
Yeah, I don't think they understand how it's supposed to work.
Is there somebody in a room somewhere going, no, I know wrong.
This time it's going to work.
Yeah, I want to be in that room and be like, I know what you did wrong. You made it, so don't make another one. Who is your audience?
Yeah, and who is the audience for the Three Little Stooges? I just don't know. I don't know if the Three Stooges has an audience nowadays.
Like, is the audience like 6-year-olds?
Yeah, and honestly, is that what any parent today wants their 6-year-olds to watch?
Right, smacking and hitting each other and frying pans and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see whether any of this actually really comes to light. But so I understand you got some news stories. Let's move on. There's got to be something more positive than anything I've come up with.
Not these first few. We're going to work our way there. So in keeping with sequels nobody asked for, Paramount is going to be making, they have announced, a sequel to Coming to America. And it will have Eddie Murphy and will be directed by Craig Brewer, who I looked up and he didn't have any directing credits that stood out to me.
Interesting. Yeah, this is definitely a sequel that no one asked for. I can't tell you how many times I've sat around and said, gosh, you know, I wonder what happened to the Coming to the America people.
I can zero. It just, like, that was such a self-contained story with a good arc that, like, what is next? Does he have a kid that wants to, like...
Yeah, that's
like,
the only thing I can think of is it's less of a sequel and more of just a retelling. I don't know what else you could do.
Like, if he has a kid and wants to do something that he's against, that doesn't that make everything that his character went through pointless?
Oh, that's a good point.
Like, if he just becomes, like, his dad? Or is it the other way, that, no, he's still this free spirit, and then he has a kid who's like, no, I want to be in an arranged marriage.
Right.
Like, how do you do the opposite?
I don't know. That actually might be kind of funny than have Eddie Murphy having his character go around trying to find the perfect wife for his son.
And
there might be some humor there.
You know, there were some people online who were kind of in support of it, and all they were doing was just, like, quoting lines from the first movie. I'm like, yeah, I get it. That was great.
Yeah, but go watch the movie.
Right, go watch it. What do you want them to do, rehash the same jokes? Like, that's not going to be a good movie.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, what year did Coming to America come out? That was 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like 86, late, somewhere around
mid to late 80s, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, there's so many properties that existed in the 80s, and that's where they belong.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to keep bringing them up.
So the other thing that they're trying to reboot is Final Destination.
Really?
Yeah, they are bringing in a couple of the writers who were responsible for some of the later Saw movies.
Okay. I mean, I know about the Final Destination films. I'm trying to remember if I might have seen the first one, but I know I didn't see any sequels.
The first one's good. There's only one scene in that whole movie I would remove.
Hmm.
And the second one's okay, and then I didn't watch anything after that. It just sort of became clever ways to kill people.
Right, because it became like 3, 4, 5 films, didn't they?
Yeah, it just sort of kept going and just got more and more gory. The first one was this really interesting, like, the characters are coming together because they need to solve this problem that there's this unseeable entity that wants to kill them.
See, and this is just a great example of what I see as kind of just sad about Hollywood is the first Final Destination, that idea, hey, okay, that's something I'm not sure we've seen before. That's good. That's clever. Okay, roll with that. What's the point of rebooting it? We now have seen that clever idea played out. in like 5 or 6 films.
Right. It's either just going to be another gore fest.
Yeah.
Or they're going to like take it too far and be like, because the whole point of the first one is death is after us, but you never see death. Death is never, it's just sort of like a gust of wind.
Right.
Or, you know, a turn of a knob.
Now it's going to be a character.
Right. It'll be some creepy thing in a cloak.
Right.
That they're going to have to try to kill.
And then it's like, well, okay, so Jeepers Creepers.
Right. Exactly. And then the other thing is they are looking to, they're going forward with a He-Man and Masters of the Universe movie, and a script is being written by Art Markham and Matt Holloway, the writers of the first Iron Man movie.
They're going to bring back Dolph Lundgren, or?
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be live action or animated or what, but there you go.
All right. I don't know. Is it a property that they could actually get something entertaining out of, or
I wonder if it's because the She-Ra cartoon is actually being really well received, and they're like, what about He-Man?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like people go one extreme or another with that. They're either going to go too campy, or they take it so seriously that it's not fun. I don't know if you can do anything live action. I'm thinking live action now. You know, maybe they can reboot it animated. I don't know. That's a really weird property to deal with.
I think these are all weird properties. And they're all very different.
Yeah.
All right. So more positive news. The Batwoman pilot has officially been ordered on the CW.
Nice.
And I know we spoke about the crossover last time, but yeah. We didn't mention how good Batwoman was.
Yeah, I did. I realized that after we talked about it, and about a day after we recorded, I'm like, oh, I didn't even mention the whole thing with Batwoman in the during that crossover.
Yeah, because they promoted it as, oh, she'll be in all 3 episodes, which she technically was, but she was really only in 1 episode.
Yeah, as
and
Batwoman.
I wanted so much more from her.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that she would be kind of the main motivator through the story.
Right. She was just sort of a plot device shoved into the second episode.
Right. But she looked awesome.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was really cool.
I enjoyed both Batwoman and Kate Kane out of the costume. I thought Ruby Rose did a very good job with that.
Yeah, no, I think she can pull it off. I knew CW was certainly was talking about doing a series, and I think I don't know if they were waiting to see how the crossover or how she would be received in the crossover before finally, you know, signing on the dotted line, or if this was going to happen no matter what. But I'm glad that they are officially saying they're going to go forward with it, because
yeah.
I think there's room for one more.
Yeah. And then the other news I have, Kevin Feige, the guy who pretty much runs everything for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has come out and said that he expects to begin developing movies on the properties acquired from Fox in the first half of 2019.
Interesting. So properties that would be like...
X-Men.
X-Men and... Nope, wait. Fantastic Four is still Sony, isn't it?
No, Fox has...
Are they Fox too?
Yeah, they are. I just don't know if they're going to go forward with that. All they said was properties, and that to me means X-Men.
Yeah, okay. So expecting more reboots is pretty much what we're going to be looking at then, maybe.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm fine with the X-Men getting rebooted because I'm not like a big crazy fan for the Fox version of the X-Men. They're just so dark and dour. And I mean, as much as I liked Logan, it's a depressing movie.
Right. I like the new X-Men films. I thought they did mostly right with those films.
The First Class.
Yeah, the First Class and the one after. Yeah, no, I was really happy with those.
Every other was good and every other was bad.
Yeah. I don't even know if I would go that far. Maybe every other one was a little more, was better than another, but I don't think any of them were necessarily bad. Well, the one with
Apocalypse was that good.
Yeah. Yeah, then I think of Apocalypse, you're right. Yeah, that one wasn't too great. Well, how many did they do? Did they do 3 or 4?
It kind of depends like on how you look at it. Like, is Days of Future Past a first class kind of one, or is it the original X-Men kind of one?
Okay, I would consider it the newer film, which I remember liking that film.
Yeah, that one was really good, but then they followed up with Apocalypse and just sort of like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, no, you're right. I didn't care for Apocalypse all that much. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he can do with them.
Yeah, I mean, they're very creative. They're very clever. They very much embrace the comic book side of things. So, you know, well, if they reboot Wolverine, don't be surprised if you see the yellow and blue or the orange and black.
That's going to be I don't envy them, the casting department on that.
I think there's a lot of – I know so many people are like, oh, you can't recast Hugh Jackman. Yes, you can.
I know you can, but that's going to be – it's going to be tough to do, I think.
I don't think it would be. I think it would be if you did something like kind of put Wolverine in the background, which is what he kind of is in the comics, like at least at the start. Like, make this Cyclops' team. Make this Storm's team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love to see actual Storm actually get center. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
She's always kind of taken the back seat on these films.
Right, especially since in the comics, at one point, she marries Black Panther. Like, she needs to be a character if they're going to go forward with something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So, yeah, like, just kind of, recast Wolverine and have him be, like, a supporting character and then build him up to something. That way people aren't, like, so divided as to whether or not they should have done that. Be like, he was only really had like 15 minutes of screen time, so who cares?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if you suddenly just go, oh, and here's a new Wolverine movie and here's the new star, then you're gonna, it's an uphill battle and constantly fighting the
the legion of Hugh Jackman fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the comparisons. So there's the word I was looking for. You're constantly having to fight the comparisons to Hugh Jackman. And yeah, if you just make him a minor character to begin with and have him slowly move his way up, give people time to adjust. And, you know, if it's the case, you start him small, and if it really doesn't seem like it's going to work, then you cast somebody else. You try again. As long as, because he's in the background, what difference does it really make?
Mm-hmm.
Until you actually find someone like, this guy could carry a film.
Right.
Yeah, that would be a really great strategy.
And then the last thing I have to share is I went and saw Aquaman finally.
Yeah, okay. So most people have been saying this is a lot of fun. All the news and previews, the news was that it was the best, even better than Wonder Woman. So what does Matt think about it?
I think it is just shy of being better than Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman was better. I like Aquaman's ending more, but Wonder Woman was a much more polished film overall. Aquaman is long. It's almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I noticed that.
There are a lot of different story threads, and it felt like so much is going on, and it falls just shy of, like, completely going off the rails. So I kind of credit James Wan with that. There's just all of this stuff going on, and it was like, it's a long movie, but it's really fast-paced, and it's like, all right, this is the thing we have to do. This is so important. Everything relies on this. They do that. Okay, here's the other thing that we have to do, and it's really important, and we got to do it, and then they do it. Okay, here's the next thing. I'm like, whoa, okay, stop. Take a breath. Pick a lane. Like, we can't have – this is so important, and then we get to it, and then we don't even, like, have a moment to breathe. We just move on to the next thing.
Gotcha.
That's kind of how the movie felt, but it didn't go so far that you're like, I can't keep up. This is awful. Like, it pulled back just enough. But overall, very fun, good tone, and without giving away too many spoilers, has one of the best moments I've ever seen in a superhero movie, in that there's a part right at the beginning of the movie where Aquaman has the option to save a villain's life and chooses not to, and then that's what leads to Black Manta swearing vengeance against Aquaman, and so then they have their battle later, and then reflecting on it, Aquaman is like, I could have saved that man. And now, as a result, I've made an enemy, and could have gotten people hurt.
Hmm.
And I'm like, oh my God, that like takes every superhero cliche and turns it on its head. Here's the hero realizing the consequences of his actions.
Yeah.
Like, that never happens. It never, ever happens. You have like Batman movies where he goes, I don't have to, you know, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. And I'm like, yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
You're Batman. You're a hero. You're supposed to save people. So here is an Aquaman movie opening with him learning that lesson. And it was so amazing to see them put that on screen.
Nice.
I loved it.
Yeah,
that
very
to me
cool.
was the highlight of the movie. I mean, there's a lot of fun movies. Momoa does a really good job of being funny, and does more than just be funny. Like he's got good comedic moments. He's actually a good actor in this movie.
I loved
his character, and I love that moment where he's like realizing like I screwed up and there's no undoing it.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that Momoa can, is able to carry this film. I just, like I was saying before, I hadn't really seen him in anything other than supporting roles on television.
Yeah.
So it's really great to see him take the reins of a movie and actually be able to hold it and hold your attention for 2.5 hours.
It definitely holds your attention. The CGI was finished. They finished that stuff.
Good.
It didn't seem rushed. The underwater parts were probably better than the on land parts.
Right.
Definitely a good movie. And then I just read today that it passed $1 billion worldwide.
Wow.
So good success for them.
Yeah. Excellent. So I guess we'll see Aquaman 2, huh?
I would hope so. And people are already talking about like, hey, because Justice League seems like it might not get a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying like, no. You've got a great Wonder Woman movie. You've got a $1 billion Aquaman movie. You have your Justice League centered around them. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Who cares if Batman and Superman might be gone? I don't really like Batman and Superman in a Justice League. I never really have. I like it when they join the Justice League and then you realize, oh, the League is better than just those two people by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I always like the idea of the League was not Superman and not Batman, and it's better than Superman and Batman.
Right. Yeah, I do like the Justice League, the animated series, at least started out where I thought they did it right with Batman, who he was part of the League and he was going to help, a lot of his money, the Wayne found, money would go toward it, but he was like, I'm not much of a team player.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you need any help, you can call.
One of my favorite comic books has the Justice League be it's Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Black Canary. And then this like businessman approaches them and says, I'm representing an anonymous party that just wants to help you get set up. And you're sitting there going like, oh, it's Bruce Wayne. It's got to be Bruce Wayne.
Right.
He's like setting them up. And then you find out it's not. It's Oliver Queen.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the other option that I was thinking.
Right. But then that's one of the reasons he goes broke. He's funneling money into something and he can't sustain it.
Nice. Yeah, well, we will see. The DC Universe, this is their chance. That they've kind of built up their foundation a little better with Wonder Woman and now Aquaman. So this is their opportunity. It depends to see what they do with it. I mean, they could throw it all away real easy. If they keep going on with the, okay, let's make 4 Joker movies and let's,
And with just a little bit of editing to the Wonder Woman and this Aquaman movie, you could make it as though Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, and Justice League never happened, and that it actually started with Wonder Woman and then Aquaman was next. If you take out one line from Aquaman, Justice League never happened.
Nice.
And then you could say, oh, yeah, this is that first movie. And then we've got Wonder Woman 1984 coming out. And that's her follow-up set in the 80s. And then, she hasn't quite gotten to the present day yet. And then here's Aquaman. And then they meet up and call that Justice League 1. The other stuff didn't happen. Alternate universe.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, we'll see what happens. This is the big moment for them. They're at a crossroads, and it depends on which direction they go. And, fingers crossed, they actually take the right path.
Yeah. Next is the Shazam movie. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting one to see how it happens because, the trailer for me didn't do a lot for me. But yeah, I've been wrong before. Trailers on, you know, going either direction, trailers have, you know, proven wrong. I've been proven wrong because of trailers before. So, yeah,
me too.
Yeah, we shall see.
Well, that's all I got.
All right, yep, that's all the news, I think. We'll go ahead and take a short break here. And then when we get back, we are going to talk about 2016's Electra Woman and Dyna Girl.
Hello, this is Rod Barnett, the host of The Bloody Pit, the podcast about eclectic film from across the decade. On The Bloody Pit, we've covered Godzilla movies, Doctor Who movies starring Peter Cushing, The Outer Limits, Fu Manchu, Doc Savage, old radio shows, my favorite movies of all time, a Lucio Fulci film or two, 1970s science fiction movies, and a long series on the films of Italian maestro Antonio Margheriti. So if you're curious to learn a little bit about some of the stranger areas of cult film and television, join me and my rotating group of co-hosts on The Bloody Pit. You might even learn something about Coffin Joe. And that's scary, people. Very scary.
Okay, we are back. Electra Woman and Dyna Girl was originally going to be a short, a web TV series, or web series, web, can't be web and TV, a web series. I did find out that apparently that never actually happened, although on like IMDb or whatever, it's still listed as a web series. But that series never aired, but they stitched the episodes together to create like a feature-length film, which I'm guessing never actually really saw the light of day other than on the web and on streaming services. But this film takes on the old 70s campy kids show by the same name that was produced by Sid and Marty Krofft, and surprisingly takes it in a more grown-up avenue.
Yeah.
Now, this is something I remember watching the old 70, it was in 1976 with this the original TV series. I remember watching it vaguely, not much about it. It was sort of in the vein of the 66 Batman, very campy, very over the top, very low budget, you know, one or two sets per episode kind of thing. So I vaguely remember hearing a news story back in 2016 or 2015 that someone was, you know, Sidney Marty Krofft was going to produce a new Electra Woman and Dyna Girl. And I probably went, okay, why would anyone want that? And that was the last I heard of it. I stumbled across this, it just popped up on Amazon Prime, kind of one of those, oh, other things like this other thing you watched. I'm like, oh, okay. What the heck? I'll give it a shot. And I ended up really enjoying it. And so I had to, like, get other people's opinions on this, particularly yours, Matt, because you can be a little bit more picky than I am when it comes to film sometimes. So I was very curious to see what you might think of this thing. Now you've watched it, so give it to me straight. What'd you think?
Overall, I did enjoy it.
Cool.
There's definitely stuff that I would pick at.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially since I get that, you know, it was a web series, so and then it kind of bounced around, and then they just put it all together as a movie. But I can't find a writing credit anywhere.
Oh, really? No.
I can't find anybody. We have a director. We have our stars. I cannot find anyone. Even in the opening credits, I saw no writer.
Interesting. So there was no writer. Everything was ad lib. No.
Yeah, as I'm on IMDb, I'm looking at it, I see the special effects, the makeup, the director, the producers, the music, no writer.
Interesting. So I wonder how that happens.
Yeah.
My only thought is that maybe there's just so many,
so many people wrote so many things.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
I don't know.
One person got a credit.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe it was
effort. That's weird. There's just not one single writing credit anywhere.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to look into that and try to find out who the heck wrote this thing. I thought, talking about writing, though, whoever wrote it, I thought there was a lot of stuff that I thought was pretty clever.
Yeah, it was definitely a clever movie. That was one of the things that I enjoyed about it, this sort of, like, take on modern superheroes. I was getting a bit of, like, a Mystery Men vibe from it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, just to give a brief synopsis of this thing, this universe takes place after what is described as the Shadow War, which was a giant showdown between all the superheroes and supervillains, which apparently destroyed or arrested most or all the supervillains, and I guess most of the superheroes either died themselves or just simply retired afterwards because all the supervillains were gone. Which leaves a lot of, like Matt was saying, mystery men-like superheroes, you know, protecting their little towns. Other heroes, doing what they can to survive, become marketable properties and are kind of hired on by and represented by, I forget the name of the company. It's a large corporation that simply, it's like an agency that sells their name for products. You know, they do soda commercials and soap and everything. And Electro Woman and Dinah Girl, who I've already forgotten their real names. I don't think their real names are even listed on IMDb here.
Oh, they refer to each other as like Judy, I think, and Laura. I think that was it. Something like that.
Yeah. I think that sounds right. I know Judy's definitely one. They are, you know, protecting their little town somewhere in Ohio, and
I think
they
get Akron.
You think Akron?
I think that's what they say is Akron.
Okay, I think you might be right. They catch a couple guys trying to rip off a 7-Eleven, and it all gets videoed on somebody's phone, and the thing gets uploaded, and it gets noticed by this agency, and they get a chance to go out to L.A. and be represented by this company. And so they go ahead and take the chance, and in doing so, they get, you know, a super upgrade on their costumes and their equipment. But things don't all go according to plan when a supervillain shows up out of nowhere and starts terrorizing the city. And of course, there's no real superheroes left to protect the world. So of course, Electro Woman and Dinah Girl take it upon themselves. And it turns out that this supervillain is a little more closely related to him than they originally thought or could have ever imagined. But that's like the briefest of synopsis there and everything. Definitely tell, again, with the writing, you can tell in a lot of places where it was meant to be a series. But they did a pretty good job of stitching this stuff together, but there are still a few holdovers where it's like, yeah, it was a series that apparently was trying to be a little meta and self-referential, and that shows up in the film a little bit, and it seems a little odd, where they actually referred to, what was it, right towards the end with the electric car. Really? We've been waiting the whole series, and that's what happens? But yeah, very clever. I like some of the humor. The characters, the two stars are just YouTube personalities.
Yes.
Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart. And you liked Hannah Hart a lot too. I saw, I think, your Instagram post or something. You thought she was the real standout.
She was. I felt like her comedy and her acting was way more polished than Grace Helbig's was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were both good, but there were a lot of jokes from Grace Helbig that kind of fell flat for me, but nothing from Hannah Hart fell flat for me.
I think I would have agreed. I think she was the standout for me as well. Grace, at times, it felt like someone that had never really done scripted comedy was being forced to do scripted comedy is kind of the impression I got from her. Where Hannah, it just seemed a little bit more natural from her. I did just find the names. It is Electric Woman, played by Grace, is Grace Helbig, is Lori. That was the, not Laura, Lori. And it is Judy, is Dinah Girl.
Close.
Yes, we're very close.
So I actually looked into Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart a little bit since they are YouTube stars. And they have their own separate page. They're not like a comedy team. But even on their pages, I preferred Hannah's material to Grace's more. Like, Grace to me came off as someone who was like trying to be funny, and Hannah just came off as a person who happened to be funny.
Right. I haven't seen it much on Grace. I did see that. I did look them both up in their YouTubes, and I did actually end up watching a few of Hannah's Drunk Kitchen.
She's so funny on those.
And there's a few others where Grace actually appears as well. So they do cross over, I guess, quite a lot onto their individual YouTube pages. They are good friends in real life.
Yep.
And they do appear. So, but I think I agree. Yeah, Grace just feels like she is funny because she's with funny people, and she can like play off other funny people, but she herself isn't necessarily naturally funny or as funny on her own.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. But still entertaining. So if, you know, if you're listening, sorry, Grace, but yeah, we still like you.
Yeah, definitely.
What did you think about the humor in this though? The first time some of the real humor shows up, and you really kind of can't quite peg the tone that this thing is going to take early on.
No, the humor was all over the place.
Yeah.
To me, the best jokes just sort of came from like back and forth banter, like when anyone was arguing with somebody. That to me was the best stuff. Like the sight gags didn't always work. Or, you know, like there's the one part where the guy's just sitting on the toilet. I'm like, I guess that's supposed to be funny.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I don't really. Yeah, that was a little odd.
Yeah, like even that, I'm just sort of like, come on, that guy would have a private bathroom.
Yeah, no kidding, he wouldn't be in the public stalls.
Like to me, that should have been the joke of him sitting there and someone being like, "Don't you have a private bathroom?" Like,
right.
That to me is a better joke.
Yeah, or maybe like, well, I'm not going to go stinking that one up. Yeah,
right. Something other than just him, you know, cursing the person out.
Right. But early on, when they end up going to that the Quickie Mart there, and they end up, I was a little surprised, you know, first of all, they're running around in costumes very similar to the original 76 Electro Woman and Diner Girl. They're all, you know, bright colors and spandex.
And I actually preferred those costumes to the upgrade. To me, it's more superhero-y. I mean,
yeah, it's true.
You know, I like the cheesy symbols on the front. I like the capes. I like the fact that it looks like it was just something somebody sewed together in their house.
Because it was. Yeah.
Right. It was great.
Yeah, they were the homegrown superheroes. It's exactly what it should look like.
I was waiting for them to pull those costumes back out for the final fight.
Yeah.
I was really bummed that didn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been fun. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that would actually have been really fun. But this thing, they've got the gun that kind of does the suction, the grappling or whatever, and ends up actually ripping some poor guy's, one of the crook's arms off. And you're like, that kind of takes you by surprise. I'm like, okay, what kind of movie is this?
Right. And I wrote down, if the banter in the apartment in the first scene doesn't get your attention, the mini mart robbery will. Yeah.
That was actually early on, again, some good humor. It's like, well, I did disarm him. And she's like, you're holding a human arm. Yeah, I am.
Holding a human arm.
Yeah, it was a trip. Yeah, you tell the it was very quick. Whoever wrote it did a really fantastic job in making the dialogue very snappy and very quick, but not to the point where you feel like, it almost crosses the line, and maybe it does cross the line a little bit, where it's like, okay, no real people talk like this. But it doesn't go over that line much.
Right.
Not far. It's still pretty close to like, okay, I've been around people that can banter like this.
If there's a part of the movie that I didn't like, it was that they called out the cliche of, you know, there's the part where it's like, oh, I promise we will not go on two divergent character journeys.
I liked that. You didn't that?
Well, because then it happened.
Well, of course, and, you know it was going to happen.
But why? That's the part to me that I wish the movie improved upon, of like, why do we treat characters like this? And why do we treat female characters like this? Oh, you're two best friends? You're easy to break apart.
Mm.
It's going to be so easy to make the material world come between you. I didn't like that. It didn't have to be that that they both completely sided with each other, but I would have preferred like some kind of argument that made me empathize with both characters. But instead, it's like, okay, Electra Woman, you've gone so far off the rails, and Dinah Girl, you are 100% in the right. Mm-hmm. That's what this movie ended up being, and I would have preferred something more of, what if Electra Woman was like, well, we should pick our battles. We don't have to save – we don't have to get involved in every fight. There are other heroes that can do that, and Dinah Girl is saying, when lives are on the line, there's no such thing as a small fight, and you're kind of like, oh, I can see both arguments.
Both sides, yeah. Okay, yeah, that I'll accept that. That's
instead, I ended up hating Electra Woman.
Right.
Pretty much like from the middle of the second act.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. And, you know, they do end up going through their little separate character arcs. And, of course, the one is, becomes endangered, causing the other one to see the error of her ways. So that's a very well-trod and tired trope with not just superhero films, but any kind of buddy action film, right. I think.
And so they mock it, but then they 100% do it because they couldn't think of anything else to do.
Maybe. Yeah. All right. Well, I liked the joke, but yeah, you're right.
The joke was good, but then they did it.
Right. But yeah, perhaps the actual doing it maybe was a little bit too much. I thought the – what do you think? We end up finding out that the villain is, you know, someone they knew, and it comes out of absolute nowhere. And the only reason we accept it is because somewhere else in the movie, they mention, yeah, I got my power like everyone else. You know, suddenly it just turns on. And like, and which is apparently what happened.
Which I think that to me is clever because you set it up that way when this person arrives with their powers, you're like, well, that's why. Thank you for establishing the world.
But I
was fine with it.
Yeah. I definitely did get the Mystery Men vibe, like you were mentioning. We've got the one guy that his superpower is that he can talk to plants.
Yeah.
You've got the wingman.
The winged wingman.
The winged wingman, who is just a wingman. He's the sidekick to, what was his name? Captain Phaser, I think, was the...
Major Vault. Major Vaunt.
Vaunt, that's it. Major Vaunt. Yeah, apparently they... every other name that they wanted to use was taken and copyrighted.
Right.
They had a really, really had a stretch. But yeah, he was a Major Vaunt's sidekick, and yeah, he was like the generic comic book guy, parents' basement sort of fella.
Yes,
maybe. Yeah, couldn't quite see the fact that he was abused at every step by the guy he idolized.
The other thing that I liked was that, you know, you get that guy like who talks to plants and stuff. And it makes you wonder, like, how many of them actually have the powers they say they do? There were a few that did. There are a few that are like, I can disintegrate things. And then they do it.
Right.
But it's like, you can talk to plants. No one can prove that you can or can't talk to plants. Like, I was hoping that would come out where he's like, I just made this up the whole time. And I don't know how to stop. Like, that to me was a wasted joke. It's like, oh, we're supposed to believe he actually can talk to plants? Okay.
I liked one of the moments I laughed a little, maybe a little harder than it probably deserved, when Lori and Judy are in the reception area of this big office, this agency. And Lori is maybe oversharing a little bit about some intestinal issues that she's having. And
she's nervous.
She's nervous, and she's whispering to Judy about, you know, what happened the last time she ate a couple, a Hot Pocket or something like that. And turns out the guy sitting across from him he's got super hearing. He hears the whole thing. He's like, yeah, you should have someone look at that.
Yeah. What I liked about that joke is we don't hear what she says.
Right.
And then she pulls back from whispering, and then she's just like, I use so many towels. And Dinah Girl's like, that poor cat. That to me is probably just improvised stuff.
Absolutely.
Came off so well.
But then they find out, oh, some other guy comes in. He's like, oh, so what's your superpower? Oh, super hearing. And she looks at him and realizes, and she's like, I'm so sorry. He's, yeah, you should definitely see a doctor.
You should have a sign on you to warn people.
That was a great little bit of humor. I liked that joke. I liked that scene.
Yeah, that was a really good joke.
And I think maybe that's where some of the best humor comes from, is when it's just the two of them and maybe it is improvised stuff. And it is two people.
Maybe there was no writer. Maybe they were just sort of like, here's the premise.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And well, and you got two people that are comedic celebrities, YouTube stars that do comedy, and obviously really good friends. And that's the best jokes worked, where it felt like just two friends who knew a lot of inside jokes with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they could really channel that. So that worked. I did like that. I don't think this could have worked as well. You would have definitely had to have had real and actual better actors if you wanted us to believe they were best friends. I mean, these guys actually, I think they were friends and then did this as friends. And that really comes through.
The other gag that I liked was when they were signing autographs. And then they just kept writing the longer and longer message on the to spite each other on the person. It's like one thing, and they fill the whole picture up with how they were getting angry at each other.
Yeah, that was good.
And then finally, then that second person comes along, and then she just writes, "Eat shit, Taki, mushrooms."
Yeah, she covers up for it. Yeah. Yeah, that was... Again, you know, talking about humor is probably the worst thing you can do. It really needs to be something that you see. Believe me, it's funnier and works better when you actually watch it than hearing us describe it. But I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was a little nervous. It's like, this is either going to be one he's either going to like it, or this one's he's really going to cringe at it.
No, I did like it. There's just some stuff I wish that they had cleaned up or taken a second pass at or just redone entirely.
Right.
Especially just in terms of, like, the character development. Because I like these characters, but I wanted them not to be cliched.
Right.
Even though I get that was supposed to be the joke, that, hey, we're going to do, like, a cliched superhero movie where one character goes one way and the other character goes the other way. But then they have, like, this total, like, turn immediately moment, and then they're friends again. But that joke wasn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, pointing out that that happened. Like, I just... Show me something a little bit more real, and that would have been better for me with the banter in between. I think that would have been a stronger movie.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, the actual plot of the movie you weren't crazy about, but you enjoyed all the humor that kind of was built around it.
Yes.
Yeah. I definitely can see that. Absolutely.
The other part that I really like is, you know, there are no more supervillains, but then all of a sudden – this, for the first time in years, supervillain shows up, and all the heroes are like, "Oh, I either somewhere I have to be.
A few years ago I would have, but now I'm, you know, my back and yeah,
right." That the heroes are afraid, and I really like that. But again, I wanted something changed where like they rallied the heroes up and turned the heroes back into heroes, and not just, oh, yeah, we go to conventions and sign stuff and endorse products.
Right. Although I think in this film, if they had done that, they would have gotten all the heroes together and they all would have died instantly.
I would have been down that. Fine. Then that to me is a joke that would have been funny. Like, show – like, I get that they had the part where Major Vaunt went to go face down the villain and he dies instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But – then imagine if they were like, yeah, but he was one person. What if all, like, 50 of us were there? Bam, dead. It's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, all right.
She just crushed everyone.
My concern, though, is if you did that joke, you can only do that joke once. And I think they would have tried to do it again with the car. You know, kind of thing.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
It would have been the car all over again.
Yep, exactly. So maybe that is just something they can only do once, and they're trying to figure out the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Easiest and cheapest.
That I reminded myself, the other joke that I really liked is they go to the crime scene where Major Vaunt died, and you see his chalk outline, including the hole that was in his chest.
Yeah, that's it is a stupid thing.
That's the obviously, one sight gag that I laughed at.
Yeah, obviously that is one of those things that no one in their right mind, no one would do that. But for some reason on this, they do it, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's taken back to like Naked Gun type humor. And it's just, for some reason, you can't help but laugh at it, even though you know it's absolutely stupid. And this movie, it does. It has a lot of, there are just some stupid things that some you just can't help but laugh. There is also some very clever things that you have to sit there and think, and you're like, that's funny, that's good. And then there's, like you were saying, there are other things that just fall flat. It is a very up and down as far as the humor goes and the type of humor. And I don't know how much of it is just the fact that this was going to be a series and then was stitched together. Would some of these jokes have landed better if they were 20 minutes at a time, a week apart, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, versus one after another, like we have them here in an hour and a, what, hour and 20, hour and a half?
Right, especially since they're done by YouTube stars who make their videos that way.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm wondering if some of the humor, if it just it comes across that way just because it really wasn't meant to be seen all at once.
Right. So the other character that we haven't mentioned yet that I thought was great was Frank.
Oh, good, yeah, Frank Heflin, yeah. Who was this the guy in the basement who designed all the equipment and outfits and everything for all the superheroes that are represented by this agency. You liked him. What was it about him that you liked?
This is that weird kind of character choice of, like, is he on the spectrum? Like, what's going on with him? Because the part where Dinah Girl is, you know, feeling, you know, like she just has her falling out with Electro.
Oh, yeah.
She goes
the big sighs.
And she's like, yeah, she's sighing all the time. And he's like, is there something wrong with your breathing, or are you trying to have me pick up on something? Because I'm not going to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I liked him. I liked him for that. Yeah, those little moments were pretty good with him. And he would, yeah, everything was just so underplayed with him. And just,
yeah,
he's in his own little world.
Yes.
And everything else just kind of goes on around him.
And then he's like, I keep my soup down here.
Right.
Yeah, all right, let's suit up here. No, not soup up. Oh, they do sound alike.
Yeah. Wait, is that minestrone?
Yes, that was the part that really got me. And then they do the whole, like, okay, they're suiting up. They're putting everything on. And then you see the soup in the microwave.
Yeah, and then they're just sitting there eating soup. But that is one of those things, that, again, maybe that was a little bit one of the jokes that sort of fell flat for me, because they knew it's time sensitive kind of thing. They need to go off and, you know, get the supervillain in, and they're just sitting there.
You can't fight on an empty stomach.
Maybe that's it.
Again, that's a scene that needed one line of, like, yeah, should you be out there fighting? I haven't eaten all day. You can't fight crime on an empty stomach.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Some line like that to kind of help really stick the landing would have helped, and it didn't have it. So it felt a little flat for me. I found it to be surprisingly enjoyable. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. And it was, so it's a nice surprise. And then the people that, you know, friends of mine that I mentioned that it's on, it's available, they went and watched it. And even they came back and went, that was surprisingly fun.
Yeah.
So it's only coming in at like a 5.4 on IMDb, which I don't know. Maybe a little low.
Yeah. I was never wanting, because, you know, that's what, like, user ratings?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So who? That's literally anybody with an email address.
Yeah, exactly. And how many of those people are confused and still thinking this is the 76, you know?
Right.
Which that would definitely probably even rate a little lower.
So then my question that I kind of asked myself that I want to ask you,
sure,
is, would you want to see these characters continued with these two actresses, or would you rather see, like, some kind of ongoing anthology where these two actresses dig up some other old obscure show and remake it, and then just keep redoing that concept over and over and over again?
I don't know.
Get like a different, like, 60-minute thing of just like, oh yeah, here's this other thing from the 60s that nobody remembers.
Right. I kind of find that to be two different questions. Question one, do I want to see these two continue, the Electra Woman and Dinah Girl? I'd be absolutely willing to watch another film or series or whatever they want to do. I'd absolutely be willing to watch these two do it. Now, would I want to see other, you know, mid-70s, 60s properties revived like this? If done in this vein, where, and with maybe just a little more polish, I wouldn't be opposed to it. Because there's a lot of stuff that I remember watching. I watched the, you know, the Sid and Marty Krofft series that this was found itself in. This, and there was Dr. Shrinker and, it was like Super Buggy or something like that. It was about some super car, like Dune Buggy. It was like a Speed Buggy ripoff. And I'd absolutely watch another, reimagining like that. Especially because it's these shows where, how many of us really remember them? It's not taking a beloved property.
Right.
It's taking some cheesy thing that the youngest of us watched and barely remember and putting a modern spin and take on it to the point where it's almost unrecognizable to the first, but still kind of has that foot into the past a little bit by acknowledging that existed, by giving them the costumes that were similar to the original, or the paint scheme on their quote unquote electric car, which was just some crappy, you know, Toyota Celica hatchback or something like that. You know, the same paint scheme that that their supercar in the original series had. Absolutely. I think, yeah, I would be willing to see that. I'd enjoy that, actually. I'd like that a lot.
I was wondering, because like I was like, do I want to see them do these characters more because of the little issues that I had with them? Like, I like them together. They're great together. I don't want to see, like, not them together, but do I want to see them as this? And then I started thinking, but if they did other things and they just sort of kept touching down on different things, that way nothing ever got stale, where it was just sort of like, well, I didn't care for that one, but this one was great. I thought that would have been an interesting idea.
Sure, sure. No, I would definitely watch them again. And I've dipped back in and looked up a couple of the videos that they have on YouTube, just them goofing around and, yeah, doing the drunk kitchen thing or making gingerbread houses with their friends. And they, you know, it's entertaining. It is, you know, YouTube entertaining, but it's not laugh out loud funny to me, but...
There's worse things to watch on YouTube.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a fun watch. I think you could waste time with worse films than watching this one. I think it's worth giving it, you know, just checking it out. Especially if you're already Amazon Prime member, you know, it's free, so can't beat that. I don't know if it was ever released on DVD or anything like that. It may only be out on the streaming services.
And the other thing I'll say is it was refreshing to kind of see this sort of like indie, go it your own way superhero movie where everyone involved seemed to be really having a good time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Like there they were. They're dressed up as these characters, both with the old costumes and the new costumes. And I'm like, I'm enjoying every second of this because it looks like they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nope, absolutely. Yeah, as we mentioned that, you mentioned, and you know, we say it, that this was kind of done as going to be the web series. It was going to be this indie thing and everything. But in the end, the film was actually distributed by Legendary Pictures.
Yeah.
So they actually got like sort of big name distributor to take care of the film for them. I thought that was interesting. Again, that's why I kind of think of Legendary as sort of like the outsider in the Hollywood production companies, but still Hollywood.
Let's see where we're on, like, the eighth Godzilla movie.
Yeah, then we'll see if my opinion changes. Yeah. All right, well, anything else you wanted to mention about the Electra Woman and Dinah Girl?
No, it's definitely a movie that's worth a watch because it is fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be one of those movies that, like, if you watch it, then maybe you'll, like, rewatch it in, like, you know, 5-10 years and be like, oh, yeah, I remember laughing at this.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's another one, too, where if you watch it, and then if you rewatch it, you may actually pick out other things. I think there's probably a little bit of humor and a few lines here and there that you might miss the first time around. And I feel maybe – I think it's a film that's rewatchable, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, well, then I guess that is going to do it. Any thoughts, you guys, if you've seen this film, you want to talk about it, mention what you thought about it, you know, please come by the Facebook group or send us an email. We'll be happy to hear what you think. And, yeah, definitely, you know, what did you think compared to the original series? That's what I didn't ask you, Matt. Did you happen to dip in and see and watch any of the original original series that this was based on?
I did not. I didn't even know it was based on a series until, like, last week.
Gotcha. Okay.
I thought it was a completely original idea.
Yep. Okay. I was curious. When I posted that we were going to watch it, I did put a clip that I found on YouTube that was one of the episodes from the original series. And yeah, it is a little tough. I couldn't even watch the whole thing. I watched a few minutes to kind of like, yeah, that's what it was. So yeah, if you watch that, definitely go and watch this. I think you'll be very surprised. So anyway, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another film. I think, Matt, it's got to be your turn to choose, I think.
I think I know what we're going to watch. Okay. You said you haven't seen it, so I think we're going to go with... No, we are going to go with 1985's Better Off Dead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have not seen that one. All right, fair enough. So there you go. 2 weeks from now, Better Off Dead. So any thoughts on that one, go ahead and drop us a line. We'll catch you later, everybody. Thanks for listening.